listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is not Matt Pollard. That's a few times I think I've done that introduction now. Maybe I should come up with something else. But anyway, I am not Matt Pollard. My name is Rachel Krieger, and you are listening to another episode of Last Word Soccer Club Radio. We are brought to you by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and our wonderful sponsors, Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. Usually when I host, it is a women's soccer show, and that is what we are doing tonight, but we have a bit of a different crew this time. Trevor Tracy is home. I think he's from Southern California. He is visiting with family, enjoying his time there, probably celebrating LAFC's newest additions. But so from our Last Word on Soccer family, we are joined by my co-managing editor, my friend, our resident Canadian, Raheem Bashir. I hope I said your last name right, my friend. Raheem, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Thanks. I'm fantastic. I'm very excited for this show. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Raheem's going to be our pinpoint for the Canadian women's national team. Lots of good stuff to talk about there. And ladies and gentlemen, a welcome back in the Last Word on Soccer realm. This is her debut for on the Last Word Soccer Club Radio podcast, but we have been on your airwaves before. My friend RJ Allen, welcome to your first LWOS pod. How are you?
I'm doing well. I think this is the sixth podcast that you and I have been on together in some form. And I'm not making that up. Rachel and I have been on a lot of different podcasts together, both as co-hosts and her being on mine and me now being on hers.
So many rebrandings. Yeah, good times, RJ, but a lot of good stuff, a lot of good memories. We were just joking off the air that Raheem is probably never going to want to do a podcast with us again just because of our banter. But I'm actually going to bring up something from an old podcast that we used to do. And it's what are we drinking tonight? I have to wake up tomorrow morning. Since I mentioned on the last show, I'm moving out of Florida in a couple weeks. And a lot of my students, they're out of school and they're like, oh, I want to grab coffee and stuff. And they're making me wake up on my day off early to go grab coffee with them. So I am sticking with just root beer tonight. Raheem, are you drinking anything? Water, soda, pop, alcohol?
Well, I don't drink alcohol, but yeah, my favorite drink is mango lassi, which is like a Pakistani drink. So yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I'll have to try that sometime. And someone has a new thing she wants to talk about. RJ, what are you drinking tonight?
So this is not a new thing. This was actually very popular with miners during like the gold rush. It's called a Boilermaker, and it is a beer with a shot of whiskey in it. That's how the Americans phrase it. It's a bit different in Britain, but it is a Guinness with a healthy shot of bourbon in it. And after the day I had, it is a welcome addition to my repertoire.
I hear you. This is my Friday. And if I wasn't meeting some students tomorrow for coffee, I probably would have grabbed a whatever is in my fridge. I'm pretty sure I have a case of Coors Light in my fridge. I've refused to go grocery shopping since I'm going on vacation.
I'm judging you for that, by the way.
I know. I just refuse to go shopping. Folks, we're going to get right into it. We have a really good show. Tonight we got the crew together to talk about the CONCACAF Women's Championship, which kicks off on July 4th, 4th of July. It's going to be a great tournament. This is serving, so just to talk about the formatting of the tournament for a minute, it is a two group stage tournament. There are four teams are going to advance to the knockout rounds and earn an instant qualification to the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand next summer. The two third place teams in the group will advance to a FIFA intercontinental playoff. They won't play against each other. And there are two nations already in those playoffs from Asia, Chinese Taipei, otherwise known as Taiwan, and Thailand. But it all the tournament also serves as CONCACAF's qualification for the 2024 Summer Olympics. The winner of the entire tournament in Monterrey, Mexico, will be advancing to the Olympics. So the second and the third place teams from the CONCACAF Women's Championship will face off against each other at a later date, and that will decide the second team in the Olympics, since CONCACAF has two spots. The tournament, as I said, is being held in Monterrey, Mexico at Estadio BBVA, which is the home of Rayadas and Rayados, and Estadio Universitario, otherwise known as El Volcán. It's the home of Tigres and Tigres Femenil. With that said, we're pretty much going to jump right into it. We have two groups, like I said, with four teams each. Excuse me. Group A has, this is such a good group. United States, Mexico, Jamaica, and Haiti. I am going to start with Raheem on this one. And I want you to just tell us your order and just a quick sound bite. Why did you go with this order? And what do you think is going to happen in this group?
Well, I think that, looking at the group, I'm going to say last will be Jamaica. So I've heard that there is some kind of things happening with the reggae girls and all the controversy. Haiti, I think, is a pretty good team. I know they defeated Canada in a youth tournament to advance to a youth World Cup. So I'm putting them third. And then, like, I still think the U.S. is the best team in the group. They have a lot of very good players. I think for Mexico, it's very much like for men's soccer, the Canadian men's national team proving themselves in World Cup qualifying. And I think for Mexico, it's the same thing. Can they compete against the U.S. and Canada? I think they're going to have some troubles and growing pains, but I think they're on the right track. I have them finishing second and U.S. first.
Okay, there isn't too much difference between you and RJ, but there is a little bit of a difference towards the bottom of your table. So RJ, give us your standings and what's going to happen in Group A.
So I have Haiti fourth and Jamaica third, but really it's interchangeable. It really does depend on how the reggae girls respond, right? We don't know how that's going to work. Sometimes it brings teams in. Sometimes it makes for terrible soccer. Until we see their first game, I don't think anybody really knows how it's gonna go. I have Mexico second and then the U.S. first. I think Mexico is very good. The U.S. has more seasoned players, and I think they have more players who are comfortable in the type of environment that they're going into. Alex Morgan is not going to be scared if the entire stadium is booing her, right? Like Alyssa Nair is going to do Alyssa Nair and just block everybody out. There are some players who are younger, who are less experienced, but by and large, the U.S. doesn't suffer from stage fright the way a lot of teams that might be having some pains do. And the U.S. is having pains, but I don't think they're going to suffer from sort of the mental seizing that a lot of teams that are going through those pains do.
I have to admit, I was pretty, I thought about changing the bottom of my table for a minute because of Haiti's win over Costa Rica. I've seen a lot, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but I've seen a lot of people making excuses about how, Costa Rica didn't put out their first, choice team. But still, I still think Costa Rica should beat Haiti. And so for Haiti to get not just a victory, but a 4-2 victory over Costa Rica, I think is pretty impressive. But I agree. I think, RJ, you said it well. It is interchangeable there at the bottom. I'm going to go with Haiti in fourth just because of there's a lot of young players on that team. I think there's a lot of inexperience. And I think Jamaica is going to get the edge over them just because of that experience. You know, I'm going to toot the horn for Mexico. I'm going to toot the horn for Mexico. And if I'm proven wrong, I won't be 100% shocked. But I'm going to put them in first and I'm going to put the United States at second. I agree with everything that both of you said about the United States, but I just think Mexico has benefited so much from Liga MX Femenil. Cady Martinez is only 24 years old, and she already has more than 100 goals in Liga MX Femenil. She got that this past season in the Clausura with Club America. One thing I really appreciate about Mexico is that they're basically doing what Costa Rica isn't. They are keeping some of their older players there because they are playing well. I mean, look at Stephanie Mayor and Bianca Sierra for Tigres. But they are bringing in some of these newer players. They are recognizing it. They have some college kids on their roster, and Monica Vergara, their head coach, has rewarded, RJ, please correct me if I say her name wrong, but Diana Ordonez from the North Carolina Courage. She has been rewarded for her play this season. She has 3 goals already in just a handful of appearances for Mexico. So I think that Mexico having, I said when Liga MX Femenil became a thing, that it was going to benefit Mexico in the long run. And I think they're really going to do well. They're hosting it. A lot of players playing at the Estadio BBVA and El Volcan. So I think it's going to be an entertaining. And of course that match is the one to circle and watch in Group A. But RJ is here because of her expertise with the U.S. Women's National Team. It's a team that we both have covered, but she, RJ's very good at looking at things very in depth. She's very tactical, and she has some really good thoughts. So I wanna ask you first and foremost about the midfield, because I know you are itching to talk about it. And talk about a certain Lindsey Horan at a number 6 position. So just what's going on with this US midfield, and why is it complete and utter chaos?
So I don't think it's complete and utter chaos. Let me start there. I'm going to start by saying no, which is every improv, like, rule to you're not supposed to break. I think the problem is Julie Ertz was Vladko's answer to a lot of questions, and there is no Julie Ertz right now. And I think he had to figure out what to do if Julie Ertz wasn't available, and she's still not available. She's very pregnant, which is a disqualification in soccer, apparently. So Andy Sullivan is sort of become the number 6, and Vladko seems to have been auditioning her backup. And I think that's why we didn't see Andy start the last game. They wanted to say, okay, we're going to have Lindsay there, and then we're going to have Christy Mewis there. Who is the backup for Andy? I don't think anybody worth their salt is saying that Andy's not going to be the starting number 6, but the question is if she gets hurt, if she's tired, if they need to rotate, if there's the one game she doesn't play, who goes in, right? Lindsey Horan is an incredibly talented football player. She is better at being a number 6 than most number 6s that start every game for their team, right? But she's not a number 6 on the U.S. team. She's not a better number 6 than Howell. She's not a better number 6 than Sullivan. She's not a better number 6 than Ertz. And the problem is when we compare her to those players, she falls short. But if Vladko doesn't want to take 2 dedicated number 6s, well, then the solution is you take Andy Sullivan. Lindsey Horan is competent, mostly. So we'll have her do it. And, oh, she can't do it. Let's throw Christy Mewis in there, who is the Swiss Army knife of the midfield. Well, it didn't look very good, right? Because she's not a number 6. Her mentality is not defensive. Her mentality is all attack. She's a masshole. Like, that is what she is, right? And to have her go against every instinct, some players can and some players can't, Mewis in her sort of pre-trial doesn't seem to have that instinct. Lindsay Horan doesn't really have that instinct either, but she's very, very good at soccer. So she's very good at one-on-one matchups as well, which in the midfield is super important. So I think it becomes a question of if Andy Sullivan is healthy and Andy Sullivan can play all of the games, this doesn't matter. Or at least it doesn't matter until Julie Ertz is back and Crystal Dunn is back and we sort of are playing with a full deck again. And then it becomes, okay, who is the best fit in this team? But that's a conversation for December, January, February. The conversation is now really is Andy Sullivan's the number six and Vladko is trying out things. He's also not giving them a ton of recent film on Andy Sullivan, which if you're worried about Mexico, and surely Vladko is, you don't want them to see Andy Sullivan. She hasn't planned for Washington either. So they don't have tape on her from there. So I do think Andy is the choice. I think he's auditioning the second one. And I think we have a maybe and a no from the two he auditioned last game.
Another position that you have your eye on. And before we started the show, RJ said she could talk for about 20 minutes on the center back situation. We might have to shorten that a little bit, but what are your thoughts on the U.S. center backs? You know, you touched a little bit on some players out with having children and pregnancy, but also, you know, Tuner Davidson tearing her ACL.
Mm-hmm. Abby Dahlkemper, not on this roster either. So two, you could predict Dahlkemper and Davidson as starters, and then all of a sudden they weren't, right? And that throws things off. Becky Sauerbrunn, who is the captain, is sort of not a guaranteed starter the way she was a year ago or the way she was 2 years ago. Emily Sonnet is a good center back, and it has been incredibly frustrating to people watching the center back situation and her not getting time there. She got time last game. She looked good. The thing with Sana is she is the deeper of the pairs of center backs, but she's rarely afforded the ability to play there. She's never the steady man in the center back pairing when she's on the national team. She's the one that has to rush forward. She's the Abby Ersig to the Abby Dahlkemper's center back in that sort of famous pairing from North Carolina's heyday. She was allowed to stay back. That's what she does with Sam Staub so wonderfully on Washington. So I think with her, you have Gurma, who is fantastic. Becky Sauerbrunn, you have Cook, who I think is going to start. I think it's a question of who is pairing with Cook more than anything. I think it's interesting. I just don't want to see Sonnet forced out to the wing because of an unfortunate coaching choice and have her play catch up, because a team like Mexico is going to exploit the fact she's not fast. They are going to exploit the fact that her one-on-one matchups do better when she's farther back and has more time. They're going to exploit that. They're too good not to. So I think with the center backs, it's Cook and then, and the and then is a huge question. And then when you talk about outside backs, if you talk about center backs, you sort of have to talk about outside backs. Fox is starting. I don't even think Crystal Dunn is going to unseat Emily Fox right now. She is too good. She is too fast and she is too smart on the ball. And not that Crystal Dunn isn't, but Crystal Dunn can be used elsewhere. And I think more effectively elsewhere. Emily Fox gives Vladko permission to do that or to switch her to the right and then have both of them there. But I think O'Hara's health is key, because one thing you notice about Vladko is he likes to have one super experienced person on his back line always. Sometimes he'll throw O'Hara and Sauerbrunn out there and have both of them coach. Sometimes it'll just be O'Hara. And you can see her talk to the bench more than she does in Washington. She is getting instruction. She is doing what her coach is asking of her, whether we are all screaming at her not to, right? And that is a difference in her game in the last probably year, year and a half. Is you can tell she is now the communicator. She is now the person telling the midfield, hey, push up, overlap with me here. And it is working a little bit better. Fox is having more success, but Fox's pairing is more favorable to her on the other side. So it'll be very interesting watching the back line. The goalkeeper is fun. They can trot out any goalkeeper in the NWSL that is eligible to play for the US that is a starter, and we will be fine at goalkeeper. It's everything else sort of from there that the US has a little bit of a question mark around, which is not something many people who are new to the US women's national team are used to. 2015 to now, outside of a couple moments, has been incredibly successful. So I get flashbacks to US versus Mexico in 2010, and I get a little bit nervous because Alex Morgan had to go to Italy and score to get the US into that 2011 World Cup.
Yeah, you know, you can't look at World Cup qualifying this year and not think about 2010. The rules obviously have changed, and the top two spots, and I think barring chaos, I mean, we all had the same we all had the same teams in the top two. I think the USA will be okay, but yeah, I mean, like, just you got to think about the Olympics too. Only two teams can advance, not all four. There's another area of the pitch that we have not talked about yet. You alluded to it a little earlier, saying Alex Morgan is not going to go into Estadio BBVA and El Volcan when it is erupting in chaos and be afraid. And I would agree with you. And she, you know, we've podcasted before, and you know, I've always been a very harsh critic to Alex Morgan, getting called up when it hasn't been deserved. But I think nobody can underestimate the just absolute tear that she's on this year with 11 goals in 10 games for San Diego. Is it going to translate to the international game in this competition? And who is your starting front three? Because that's what Flacco has been using.
So I don't know if it's going to translate. I don't necessarily think it has to. I think she has a different role on the national team than she ever has before. She is much more the person that you have to double team. Well, if you double team Alex Morgan, guess who's open? Sophia Smith and Mal Pugh. And guess what? You probably should double team both of them too, which means somebody else is open. Rose Lavelle's open. Lindsay Horan's open. Andy Sullivan's open, right? You can't double team everybody. So I think the thing that Alex Morgan can do is draw attention, because you have to game plan for her, right? She's that good. She is that talented. She is that deserving of respect, which means Smith and Pugh are open. And I think having that role and accepting that role is a step in Alex Morgan's career, but it's also incredibly important, because Abby Wambach used to have the same thing happen. People would double team her. She'd get one shot on goal, but Alex Morgan would have a brace, because if you're double teaming her, you're not double teaming Alex. So I think that we'll see how her form is. I think she looked fine in her minutes. I think Vlatko clearly is not putting her with the A team right now, which is an interesting choice, I think. But I think if you have Alex out there, she's very good at being Alex Morgan. She can shoot from anywhere, and she will. And she is not afraid to take on a goalkeeper. And a lot of goalkeepers know that, right? A lot of goalkeepers play with a 3-foot bubble around them because they know the forward doesn't want to hit them, because they think if the forward hits them, or the forward thinks if they hit them, they're going to get called. Alex Morgan isn't scared of going body to body with a goalkeeper. And that is a superpower in soccer, especially women's soccer, because Alex Morgan gets favorable calls more than anybody in soccer, right? Maybe Sam Kerr gets a couple of calls that she shouldn't, but Alex Morgan gets her fair share, right? So if you're a goalkeeper and Alex Morgan is coming at you, you have to do very different math than you do with Sophia Smith, Mal Pugh, Ashley Hatch, even if Kristen Press was out there, right? So I do think Alex Morgan has that power, and I do think she's going to be useful. I really think it's Sophia Smith who is the future of this attack, and she is looking like the future of this attack in a way that is super important. And I think Alex Morgan seems to be willing to play with her and Mal Pugh in a way that is sort of new for her. And it's cool to watch. I think the attack is interesting for the US, but it needs to mature. And I think that is this tournament is a good place for it to mature.
Good stuff on the US women's national team. And to give you guys a little bit of rundown on Mexico, all I have to say is Licha Cervantes, golden boot winner in the Clausura, 14 goals for Chivas de Guadalajara, the Clausura winners over the new Jenny Hermoso Pachuca team, Charlyn Corral led. Kind of shocked that we didn't see Corral on the final roster for Mexico after a really, really good season for them. But that just opens up the door for a lot of their younger players, a great attacking talent like Katy Martinez. Still bummed and just pretty crushed that Alison Gonzalez misses this tournament. She's still recovering from an injury that she actually suffered in her last couple weeks at Atlas, and did not play much for Club America this past season in the Clausura. But it's a mixture of young and old. This is Monica Vergara's first CONCACAF Women's Championship, so I'm interested to see how that goes. They went on a tear in the qualification to this qualifying tournament. But I mean, Mexico has been looking good in their friendlies so far. They played a good Peruvian team in their last two friendlies. I think in total they scored either 8 or 9 goals. But Mexico, I mean, their attack is just so wicked and strong, and so they are going to be giving the U.S. defense a bit of a run for their money, and hopefully the Mexico defense can hold up against the United States attack as well. It's going to be a really good game. I was told no work while on vacation, so I will be sneaking it on my phone, and hopefully Brendan doesn't catch me too much on it. But we're gonna move on from Group A. That was great. Thank you so much, RJ. Appreciate all of that. And we are going to move to Group B. And if y'all thought I was a Mexico fan, wait till you hear us talk about Costa Rica. But before we do that, we're gonna go to all of us. Yeah, it looks like all of us have, I mean, I'm just going to read it off because we all have the same thing, but we're going to talk about what's going to happen in this group. But all of us, a clean sweep for Canada all the way through. I'm so sorry, Costa Rica, but you know, I got to be a realist here. We all picked Canada in first, Costa Rica in second, Panama in third, and then Trinidad and Tobago in fourth place. Let's go with RJ first. RJ, why does Costa Rica get above Panama in this group? And then, you know, your prediction.
They're a better team. I mean, that is ultimately, I think, the core of it, right? They are a better soccer team. They have players that I think will do well. Yes, they lost to Haiti, right? They got embarrassed. Teams lose to other teams that are not as good as them all the time. Look at the NWSL results from this year, right? Like, it happens. I do think Trinidad and Tobago, unfortunately, are going to be left behind a little bit. I think Panama will do well. I think they will show themselves well, but I don't think this is their tournament. I think they need another cycle. Costa Rica, I think, is good. I think they are a pretty good team. But they are in a group with the current gold medalists of the Olympics, which is Canada. They have, you know, some very, very young, very exciting talent. They have some very seasoned talent. They have, you know, sort of everything you could want in Canada. Now, will Canada is the question, right? Like, will they, you know, become the Canada I grew up with as a soccer fan? And you're like, you're so good, but what happened? I don't think that's who they are anymore, but there's always the chance that Canada will, somehow they will all grow the old Aaron McLeod mohawk and go back to 2012.
I mean, we have to throw it to Raheem now after that one. So Raheem, actually, before I do that real quick, I just want to make a note that Trinidad and Tobago is the only team. So for context, the qualifiers, the United States and Canada, they got into the CONCACAF Women's Championship with an automatic bid due to their high placement on the FIFA rankings. So Mexico, Costa Rica, Panama, Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica and Haiti, they all were in. I think it was a 30 team qualifier. And then each group winner advanced on. Trinidad and Tobago was the only team that did not advance into the CONCACAF Women's Championship with a perfect record. They tied Guyana in their last game. And thankfully Guyana lost a cup or won more than Trinidad and Tobago did. So Trinidad and Tobago squeaked by with a draw in that final game. And there was something else I was going to mention, a fact. Oh, yeah. So Costa Rica, just they benefit certainly due to being in the, when they do draws, they have pot one, pot two, pot three, pot four. And they got benefited hugely by being in pot two with Mexico. I think if somehow, some way, it would have been a group of like US, Mexico, Costa Rica, and like Haiti, for example, if they were in that pot three, I think they would have been in big trouble. So I think Costa Rica certainly gets a benefit with their group. Raheem, before we talk in depth about the Canadian women's national team, can you just talk us about the group stage and why you think these teams are going to finish in the way that we all predicted?
So starting with Trinidad and Tobago, honestly, I think they might be the worst of the eight teams in the tournament. You mentioned that they squeaked through to the final round of the CONCACAF W Championship. Panama, I would put third. I think they'll do well, but I don't think they'll be... Maybe they might be able to get a result against Costa Rica, but I think they're going to finish third. Costa Rica is interesting because I know for the Olympic qualifying for 2020, Canada beat Costa Rica 1-0 to get into the Olympics. And Costa Rica, I think, were pretty dismayed because I think they believed they could have won that game against Canada. And Canada would end up winning the Olympics after that. So I think they would probably be the biggest challenge for Canada. However, I think Canada has gained a lot of confidence from that time in Olympic qualifying, winning Olympic gold. And now they're playing many games in front of their own fans. I believe 5 in all in Canada. So, yeah.
Raheem's going to have a field day if Canada and the U.S. are in the final and Canada beats the U.S. because that means both the Canadian men's and women's national team finish number one in their CONCACAF respective qualifiers. But to a point about Trinidad and Tobago, completely forgot about this. On Wednesday, I think it was, they actually... because every team has played in a couple tune-up friendlies ahead of this tournament. So Trinidad and Tobago actually played CF Monterrey Femenil, and they lost 2-0. Silvana Flores and Christina Birkenrode scored in that game. So, you know, that's kind of, in a way, Monterrey is like playing the group or the B team of Mexico, if you really think about it. So they got a tune up. Pretty cool that they got to do it against a club side. But yeah, I couldn't agree more, Raheem. I think the standings are pretty just set, I guess, for lack of a better word. But I want to talk to you about Canada. They're coming into this tournament with gold medals hanging around their neck from the Olympics. Like you just mentioned, a lot of confidence. Was looking at some of their games from this calendar year. They had a bit of a shaky Arnold Cup, but just kind of talk about what Canada's done this year and why you think they're going into these qualifiers with so much confidence.
So Canada is an interesting team. They're not like the U.S. or Sweden, where they're going to dominate the weaker teams and they're going to beat the better teams by a normal score. Canada has been looking for that offense for a very long time. Janine Becky, I've noticed against South Korea in Toronto, and then the two games against Nigeria in Vancouver and in Langford, British Columbia, she has been connecting and creating a lot of crosses for players. However, the unfortunate thing has been that nobody has connected on those crosses and put it into the back of the net. So Canada, even right now, needs Christine Sinclair offensively. I think defensively, that might be the best in the world defensively. That's why they won the gold. But it's going to be very interesting with Canada because they could beat Costa Rica 2-1 and then they could conceivably, theoretically, not saying it's going to happen, beat US 1-0. They're that type of team.
Raheem wrote a really good analysis of the Canadian women's national team roster on Last Word on Soccer. Be sure to check that out. We will put it in our show notes. But Canada recently played a friendly against South Korea, a 0-0 draw. Raheem, you were at the game. It was in Toronto, yes. Your neck of the woods. What were just your thoughts after being there watching it? And what do you think Canada is going to take away from that and bring to the qualifiers?
Well, they're going to bring in that they haven't got that. I would say because Christine Sinclair was like sitting for most of the game, and Nichelle Prince was also sitting for most. I think Sinclair wasn't there for all the game, and Nichelle Prince for most of the game. I think those are the two players that I'm looking at offensively. I know Nichelle Prince has been playing very well for the Houston Dash. So that's a player that I could see lessen the workload for Christine Sinclair. I also want to mention Jordan Huytema. She's quite young. I know she hasn't got the goals recently, but she was a big reason why Canada made the Olympics in 2020. She was a critical player in that team and scored several goals for the Canadian women's national team. They also have Ashley Lawrence and Deanne Rose. And mentioning the Canadian kind of doesn't have its own league, I think is something that needs to happen. So when I started watching women's soccer, it was Canada versus the US in 2012 London Olympics. That's what got me hooked to women's soccer, because even though they lost to the US, it kind of galvanized all the Canadians, and it also helped that they beat France in the bronze medal game. So, but they do need a league. So because if you look at 2012, the two best teams by far were the US and Japan. And Japan has dipped. They're no longer in the top 10 in the world, the Japanese. So it's something Canada needs to look at. I don't know what you two think, but I do know two cities that could get NWSL teams. So Grant Wall mentioned Toronto as possible NWSL team. And I heard MLSE ownership is looking at women's teams, not just soccer, but basketball and hockey as well. And then this has been kind of rumored for, not rumored, but interest has been there from Calgary. So I know Dwayne Rollins tweeted about Calgary wanting a NWSL team. And then Kamek Kepke mentioned about Calgary wanting an NWSL team. And they were actually, you know, working on the pro-am kind of, or like semi-pro league. And it's not confirmed, but I'm assuming it's the WPSL Canada League. And they may be looking at the WPSL Canada League before going into the NWSL. And the last thing I would point out is that Calgary and Edmonton, there was like an economic analyst in Kamek Kepke's article which said maybe NWSL team can play half the games in Calgary and half the games in Edmonton. So that's all.
I think the expansion conversation is something, it's really interesting, because I think you have to look also to at MLS and how they've done it. They have a majority of their league is in the United States, but they do have Canadian teams, and those Canadian teams are they're very well run. They are, you know, they have had their history of success, especially Toronto. And I know when Josie Altidore was in Toronto, he talked a lot about wanting an NWSL team there. And even though he is in New England, he still has a lot of really close ties to Toronto as well. But one thing that I think Canada has been doing that's been really interesting, and that I could see the United States and the NWSL doing is, on the men's side, of course, you have Major League Soccer, and then you have your three Canadian teams, Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal. But then you also have the Canadian Premier League, which yes, Raheem knows very well and covers. He's the lead writer and the lead coverage guy for that whole team. And they do a really, really great job at Last Word on Soccer. So it's not far-fetched to expand the NWSL and have, you know, a team say in Toronto and in Calgary, and then also maybe have a league like the Canadian Premier League, maybe Canadian Premier League Femenil or something like that, and have that compete alongside kind of as that like second division team. So the conversation about Canada and expansion is really good. RJ, what do you think about Canadian expansion?
I think the thing with Canadian expansion that could be really helpful is I live in upstate New York, right? We're never getting a team back in upstate New York. We're never going to have Western New York Clash 2.0, right? Never going to happen again. can get a team just north of the border, though. And I'm equidistant from the Canadian border and the fine people in French Canada and New York City, right? Like, I can go either way and get there in about the same time. So if they put teams sort of along the traditional path of where you put things in Canada, which is pretty close to the US in most places, I think you sort of get double points, right? You put teams in places that have ties to soccer. Upstate New York has a lot of ties to soccer, but maybe we can't support a team here anymore. But if you put them in like a Montreal, then you get having it in Montreal, but you also get the benefit of people coming from sort of that upstate New York, that Western New York, you know, over to the games. And then you have sort of the ability to do that. You can get that support without necessarily having to put a team in places with a smaller population. You can hit those centers, those population centers. And I think having a league in Mexico makes a lot of sense for how it's set up, for their traditions, for all of that. I think if you had a first division team in the US and Canada, I think it would just eat each other's lunch all day. I don't think it could sustain, especially with England and France and Germany and even China throwing a lot of money at people in Japan. I think the US and Canada are too similar in their sort of history with soccer and especially against each other, that it is going to benefit Canada more to have NWSL teams and really make it a US and Canadian league the way it sort of was at the beginning when you had the allocation system where it was US, Mexico, and then Canada, and then it sort of just became US and Canada. I think that benefits everybody a lot more. And then you have a super strong second division league that is Canadian to sort of move people around. But yeah, that's sort of my thoughts there. So I don't think that a lot of border towns on the US side can support a team the way that they can on the Canadian side, just because of how population centers work.
Yeah, the expansion conversation is one that's going to be had for quite some time. Jeff Kasouf wrote for ESPN today that Utah Royals are aiming to come back into the NWSL in 2024. I think we all can raise a glass and cheers to that one. And then there was the announcement about like a week ago, I think now, of Danielle Slayton, Brandi Chastain, Allie Wagner, and who's the other one? Leslie Osborne. And they are one to bring a team to the Bay Area. California can't take all the teams though. So let's show some love to Canada. But also like, just look at what Liga MX Femenil has done for Mexico. And I think a lot of the Canadian players, like I remember Steph LeBay talked about it a bunch about, look at what Mexico is doing, just grow it. And like that league didn't start with getting players like Jenny Hermoso. It started with, you are only allowed to be a Mexican international and we are going to grow our talent. And once they started growing that talent, they started opening it up very slowly. One international last year, it was two internationals. They are expanding it to four internationals. So I think, and a couple weeks ago, I got to talk to Carmelina Moscato, and she had even said, you know, when I was working for the Canadian Federation, I looked to Liga MX Femenil and basically saw what Canada needed, how to bring up a league so you can find those soccer players that are playing maybe just not in the big cities. So definitely a very good conversation to have, one that I'm sure we will be having for quite a long time. I will keep it short, sweet, and to the point on my feelings and thoughts on the Costa Rican women's national team, the Ticas. Vamos las Ticas. I'm very excited to watch Costa Rica in the CONCACAF Women's Championship. I am a little bit nervous after the Haiti game. I'm trying not to overreact, but I do not think it is fair to use that argument of, oh, well, they didn't put out their first starting team. There are players that are on that first starting team that were in that game. But also that doesn't comfort me when people say, oh, well, they didn't put out their number one starters. Okay, well, what happens if a player like Maria Paula Salas, Raquel Rodriguez, and, you know, what's her name? Daniela, I can't think of her last name, but she's like one of their best defenders. But it just, like, you can't use that argument because it doesn't make me comforted if one of those players goes down and then you throw Carl Sanchez or somebody in there and then they can't perform. So I don't know. I'm a little bit nervous. I'm trying not to overreact. I do think Costa Rica definitely has some favors with their group, but I don't think, and I know none of us are saying this, but I don't think we can sleep entirely on Panama. They do have a very young team. They have a little bit of an inexperienced team, but it's a team with a fire under them, especially with the expanded qualification for the World Cup. Yeah, just the World Cup, not the Olympics. But that was great. I appreciate that, guys. Raheem, thank you for your knowledge on the Canadian women's national team and for teaching me a little bit about how Calgary wants an NWSL team. I had no idea about that. We're going to finish out this show, everybody, with our round table. We have one topic to discuss, and we are going to discuss it as a group. We're going to do pick'ems. We're going to get into last words. And then we are going to continue counting down the days to the CONCACAF Women's Championship. This was just something that I had saw on Twitter a couple days ago. After it was a little bit after the host cities got announced for the 2026 FIFA World Cup, that of course Canada, Mexico, and the United States are going to be hosting together for the Men's World Cup in 4 years from now. But there are talks that the U.S. and Mexico want to have a joint bid for the 2027 FIFA Women's World Cup. That would be pretty crazy in just one way, that hosting two major tournaments back to back. Of course, I think it's pretty clear why Canada didn't get thrown into that bid. They did just host back in 2015. Of course, I do think it makes a strong bid, but USA and Mexico also a very strong bid as well. What do you guys think about this? Of course, we know the US and Mexico are hosting in 2026. Could they do it back to back? Is this a thing? Is this a thing that we should maybe in a premature way get excited about? Raheem, I'll go first to you, my friend.
I think it will be a great way, especially for Mexico. I don't think the U.S. needs Mexico to host the Women's World Cup. And actually, in my opinion, I think Mexico can eventually host their own Women's World Cup. They hosted two FIFA Men's World Cup. And I do think Mexico, like the U.S. and Canada, can host their own Women's World Cup. But maybe the 2027 Women's World Cup can be like an intro to hosting big events in women's soccer.
RJ, what are your thoughts on potential 2027 FIFA Women's World Cup in US and Mexico?
So I have some mixed feelings on it because I don't want it to become Australia and New Zealand hosting the 2023 Women's World Cup, where like Mexico gets a couple of games and a group stage and the US gets all of the major games, right? Like, I don't want it to be that, because Mexico has a lot of history that the US doesn't in terms of time, just pure time, because of how soccer has worked in the US. But I also, you know, do I want another final at the Rose Bowl and have like the history of 99 there, you know, 20 years later? Yeah, that would, you know, 30 years later. No, 20, I was right the first time. Math is not my passion, everybody. But anyway, like the idea that, would I like a final at the Rose Bowl for that history? Yes, right? But it does create a problem. The U.S. is very, very big. I don't think most people that are not from the U.S. understand, if you're playing in New York, Houston, and L.A., how much physical travel that is, right? And if they do the groups in the let's have the biggest splash we can way, then I think teams are going to suffer from it. If they are reasonable, and we're going to play in New Jersey, Boston, and DC for one group, that is more reasonable, right? You can make that trip in a day or two from each place and be okay. So I worry sort of for those reasons. I think Mexico should host their own World Cup. I think the US should host their own World Cup. I do worry with the way that women's soccer is in the world right now, I sort of wonder what places can feasibly hold a Women's World Cup that are not just the same like seven countries on rotation for the next 50 years. You do need to give it to places that are trying. And I worry that, okay, the US and Mexico are holding it jointly, and then 12 years later, the US is hosting it. And then 6 years later, 8 years later, you know, Mexico is hosting it. Like, giving it to the same places, I do think can be a problem. But you also want it in places with engagement and with sort of the infrastructure for it. You don't want to have to build a bunch of stadiums the way they did in Brazil and have that problem that they did with the Men's World Cup. So I have a lot of conflicting feelings. Would I like a World Cup game in New Jersey and be able to drive down for it and watch it? Yeah, that would be great. Do I want it in a country like Spain, where it's becoming more popular and you have some of the best players in the world playing there for club and it grows it? I kind of would like that more, right? So I feel selfish for wanting it, but I also, if they put it here, I'm not going to not go.
I totally agreed. Just two things. Number one, my belief in FIFA picking the Rose Bowl is gone after they skipped it for what's that new stadium in Los Angeles, Lo-Fi or SoFi stadium for the Men's World Cup in 2026. And also, great point about the travel. Great example for Spain. You stole my example. I was just about to use that. So great minds think alike on that one. But yeah, selfishly too, I would love to see it. I know full and well that the city, beautiful, beloved city of Pittsburgh, is not going to get a World Cup game. I am already planning my trip to Philadelphia in 2026 for the World Cup. But anyway, I think
New York has a better chance than Philadelphia of getting a Women's World Cup game.
Orlando has a better chance at this point. Oh man, you made me laugh and now I forgot what I was going to say. Something about like travel or whatever. I know what I was going to say. We're going to see how travel and all that stuff plays out in regard to your point about, you know, one group playing in one area and one group playing in another in that 2026 World Cup. So it'll be interesting to see how the travel goes there. But with that, we're going to move on to pick'ems. Pretty much, since you guys are newbies to the podcast, it's pretty plain and simple. I'm going to read off the games, and then I'm going to ask you guys what your final score prediction, and then your one sentence introduction on why you think it's going to happen. So here we go. We're going to roll into pick'ems. We made this doc, and then I threw this game in here as well. The first one, because I think this is going to decide your second place team, barring Costa Rica or Panama and any catastrophe when they play Trinidad and Tobago. So Costa Rica versus Panama on July 5th, 7 p.m. It's going to be on Paramount Plus for RJ and I. It's going to be on One Soccer for Raheem and all of his Canadian friends. Curious to hear your thoughts. I'm pretty sure I already know it because of our picks in the standings. Raheem, who do you think wins and why?
So between Costa Rica and Panama, I think it will be an interesting game. I'm going 2-1 Costa Rica. I think Panama might put a fight, but I believe Costa Rica will win that game.
RJ.
Costa Rica. Why? Raquel Rodriguez.
Costa Rica. Why? Costa Rica. There you go. I'm going to go with Costa Rica, but I'm going to say it's going to be just an absolute chaotic bash of CONCACAF and just, oh man, guys, I love CONCACAF so much. So give me 2-1 with a lot of chaos. We're going to jump into our next pick'em. All right, guys, this is where we're getting real at. We've got Mexico versus the United States, El Tri Femenil versus the USWNT, July 11th, 10 p.m. Eastern time. I don't know what time that is in Hawaii, so I'm going to have to check so I can sneak that. Paramount Plus, One Soccer, once again, they are hosting all of the games for this tournament. Give me Mexico. Yes, I'm doing it. Mexico 2-0. And all I'm gonna say is Licha Cervantes and Caddy Martinez. RJ, who you got and why?
So just so you know, Hawaii is 6 hours before Eastern time, so they're negative six for your time. So it'll be
4
four in the afternoon.
p.m. Whoop whoop.
Lovely time to watch soccer.
Woo.
I am going with the U.S. Why? Because I think the kids are all right, and the kids being Sophia Smith and Mal Pugh. Rose Lavelle, I guess, is a kid at this point. I don't know. I think the U.S. just has more firepower. The U.S. has more players that are at a certain level. I think Mexico is very good. If Mexico keeps this game close, they could win. If Mexico lets the U.S. get a couple of goals or lets them score early, the game is over.
Raheem, I know you're going to pick the United States, so let's just rip the band-aid off and you tell me why.
So actually, I'm going to go with a draw. I think US will finish first overall because of goal differential. I do think if this was taking place in the US or Canada, any other country, I do believe the US would win this game. However, since the game is in Mexico, and I do know Canada played in Mexico last year, they lost one game and they drew one game against Mexico. So I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw.
Raheem with the chaos. I love it. I love it. CONCACAF looks good on you, my friend. Canada versus Costa Rica on July 11th. This is Canada's final tilt in their group stage as well. 7 p.m. Eastern time, Paramount Plus One Soccer. Raheem, this is your team versus my team. You know, on Last Word on Soccer, we always talk about, you know, for example, when Sporting Kansas City and Seattle play, we call it the Dan Rachel Derby. When Colorado and Seattle play, the Matt Rachel Derby. So this is the Raheem Rachel Derby, the R&R Derby. So who wins and why? And why are you saying Canada?
I just think Canada won't blow Costa Ricans with their scoreline, but I do think that their players are just too good right now for Costa Rica. I do believe it will be similar score to the Olympic qualifying for 2020. So I'm going 1-0 again here. I think Canada will get a shutout, a clean sheet, and they'll get one goal.
Go ahead, RJ. What do you think?
It's going to be Canada because Christine Sinclair will go supernova if it's not. That is literally the answer. The answer is if it is draw at halftime, Christine Sinclair will be so supernova that you'll actually be able to see her in New York. That is how bright the light coming off of her as a nuclear explosion will be. Canada's not gonna blow this. I have lived through years of Canada blowing games. I think those times are over. I think their head coach has given them some confidence. They're never going to be a 7-0 team, but they don't have to be. They just have to win, and I think they're going to win.
Canada has a streak of likable head coaches. I love John Herdman. Love what he did for the Canadian women's national team.
Tiny, tiny shirts.
have to admit, give him credit where credit is due. He has done wonders with the men's national team as well. That's the only nice thing I'll say about them, Raheem, until after the World Cup. And Bev Priestman, man, she knows what she's doing with Canada. But she is no Amelia Valverde. No, I'm kidding. 6-0 Costa Rica. Pure CONCACAF kitten. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Oh, Lord Jesus. I don't think Canada gets a clean sheet, but I'm going to say they're going to win 3-1. Why not? Give me some chaos in this game. Give me a really early yellow card too on a.
Chapman.
Yeah,
It's always Chapman.
I
It's
was going to
always
say
Chapman.
Sheridan just to make things interesting, but you know, we can go with Chapman. But folks, we're going to move on to last words. I had explained already before the show what these are to our new newbies. So we're going to have my friend, my big sister, RJ. You can go first. Please tell the kind folks of Last Word on Soccer where they can find you on social media and give us your last words.
You can find me at a soccer pundit. I am a pundit emeritus in the world of women's soccer. I think that's about what sums up who I am for soccer now. My last word is please, somebody, turn Andy Sullivan into the girl in the plastic bubble, and anytime she is not physically on a soccer pitch, just put her in a plastic bubble, because if she goes, so goes the team.
Fair enough. Raheem, tell us where people can find you on Twitter, and give us your last words, my friend.
So I can be found on Bashira. So Bashirra is my soccer, is my like Twitter account. I also have a soccer podcast that I do called the Red and White Soccer Podcast. So it's the Red and White 4 is the hashtag for that. And I'm hoping, I haven't started, but I'm hoping eventually to start a basketball podcast, which is Red underscore podcast. You can find me tweeting and basically writing articles for Last Word on Soccer, the soccer side of it, but also I'm also there for Last Word on Rugby. So I cover rugby union and rugby league. So you can find me sharing articles on that as well.
I've been waiting for this all show, because since you guys are our newbies, you have not experienced the ad reads that happen before the host does their last words. So I have to ask you, Raheem, RJ, are you tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas? Are you looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team? Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price with the motto, any design you want. Seriously, let them help you create your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. And we also want to thank our wonderful sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team today at Roughneck Scarves. Also want to thank the Beautiful Game Network and Last Word on Sports, Inc. for all of their support, our two wonderful sponsors. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Rachel Krieger. There are two A's in my name, not just one. Just my last words, pretty much just get ready for a fun tournament. I am bummed, but also I am missing it for good reason. Going on a much needed vacation with my partner. So I'm very excited about that. I've never been to Hawaii before. This is going to be his third time. So thankfully I'm traveling with somebody who is very experienced. Although it should be an interesting flight, because even flying just from Pittsburgh to Orlando, every time I feel turbulence, I feel like I need to write my last will and testament. So flying over an ocean, for 5.5 hours is certainly going to be interesting. And Brendan was like, well, I'm going to be sleeping. And I said, absolutely not. I need someone to talk to. So you better wake up. So we'll see how we do after traveling, together and being together for a straight week, but it should be fun. I'm excited. Folks, don't miss out on the CONCACAF Women's Championship. It is going to be a wonderful tournament. I know I will be watching the first group stage games, and then I will be back for the knockout rounds. But really, Raheem is going to be manning the ship while I am gone on vacation. He and our team of writers are going to be working together to get some awesome content out for you guys. I'm going to plug real quick. I got permission to do this, so I'm all good here, but got my Group B preview coming out. Time of recording is Thursday night. This podcast will likely be out on Friday. So check out my Group B preview over at equalizersoccer.com and also my Group A preview. But folks, for myself, for Raheem, thank you for joining us on the Last Word Soccer Club Radio, brought to you by Last Word Sports, Inc., Roughneck Scarves, Icarus FC, and the Beautiful Game Network. We will see you all next time, and go enjoy the CONCACAF Women's Championship for real. So everyone, have a great night.